This episode is sponsored by Sanebox, a great way to focus on the important emails and boost your productivity.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Unemployment at 14.7% and markets shrug. Yes, we are now in a recession. Earnings looking back, flying blind. And our guest today, CEO of YChart, Sean Brown. All this and much more on episode number 661 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm your host, and I'm also the president and founder of Horowitz & Company. And if you didn't know, we're an investment advisory and a management company. Basically, what that means to you is that we help you and people like you with their investments. So maybe it's something that you want to consider after listening all these years to what we're talking about here on how we can help you with crafting a portfolio that may be really appropriate for you and in these kinds of times. So where are we, by the way? You know, I mean, May 2020, markets are trying to, I guess, follow up or continue the trend from April. And we have this uncanny bid in the markets. Yeah, we've seen some days where the markets open up and the futures are up in the morning, and then they kind of slowly start to roll over by the afternoon towards the end of the day, but finish positive by the end. And a lot of people are wondering and scratching their heads and saying, like, what is going on? I mean, we have some things that are happening that don't seem to make sense. And maybe it's the idea that, well, things will get back to normal in short order. Or maybe it's all this money that has been sloshed around in the markets due to the massive fiscal and the monetary policy and stimulus that's been poured in. Maybe that's something, but it doesn't matter. Whatever it is, we've talked about this idea of a massive disconnect between markets and the economy. And markets are still a little bit off of the year, although the Qs or the NASDAQ 100, the big cap, large, multi billion to trillion dollar companies, particularly in the technology and healthcare field, though that index is positive on the year. Yeah, you heard that right. Positive on the year, which is pretty amazing considering all that's going on. And so whatever the reason is for this disconnect, where there are some reasons why companies are doing better in this kind of environment, but yet there's something to be said about, well, yeah, but what if we are in fact entering into a longer-term recession and we are entering into a time things are different and all of that? What happens there? You know, what's going to happen with regard to the reality of where we are in markets? Does it ever match up to the economy? And you're going to start hearing more and more about this if you haven't heard it so far. This idea, this disconnect, and then all the reasons and the rationalizations of why it is. That's okay, because you know what? There's a lot of stimulus out there. You know what? People are looking through this quarter, looking through next quarter. You know what? Things are starting to open up and the worst is behind us. You know what? We may have a vaccine. These are going to be the things that you're going to hear about. And not that any of those are wrong. Not suggesting that at all. Because, you know, if we do get a vaccine, okay, good. You know, things pretty much go back to normal. We do get some good treatment and people can feel that they are more comfortable, that they could take the risk of going out and doing certain things. Okay, that's reasonable also. But if that doesn't happen, and if everything doesn't fall into place perfectly, if these reopenings early without going through the proper steps to make sure that we have testing and that we are at least on some kind of decline on the level of cases. And we do see another spike. But if everything doesn't go just perfectly, what's next? I mean, are we going to have another lockdown? Probably not. I think the herd mentality concept is going to play out. But do we ever get to either where the fundamentals start to match up to the economic outlook, or the economic outlook gets a lot rosier and matches the fundamentals? This is a big question, and this disconnect is something that's going to be a battle with, and really we won't really know which side was right until much further down the road. And I got to tell you something else. There have been times, many times, that the economics and the stock market don't match. And most of those times are when they have an outside source that's helping propping them up, which of course we know right now is the stimulus a la central banks, a la governments. But let's talk about a couple of the points on economics for a second here. The ISM services number and the manufacturing number, when you put those together, clearly, unquestionably, stating that we are now absolutely in a recession. And the unemployment numbers, 20 million people not working from compared to last month. Last month was revised a little bit higher from about 700 plus to about 800 plus thousand people that were taken off the payrolls, and a lot more to come as we are seeing another 3.7 or so million people sign up for first time unemployment benefits just this week. So we have a lot that's happening in terms of the unemployment, yet we get a 14.7% unemployment rate as compared to the 16 or 17% that was expected. I calculated, did some rough estimations, that would be right about 16%. It is possible that there's some undercounting that's going on due to the fact that it's very difficult to get these numbers done. And there was some conversation from the agency that puts this out that they would have some difficulty in getting out some of these numbers due to the lockdowns and all that's going on. The big question is going to be, of course, what's going to happen next month and the month after that, but really, how long is it going to take to get back to full employment, even 5%? Because the question is, how many of these jobs are permanently lost, and how many jobs are just temporarily furloughs? Now, another point I want to kind of address here, we know the economics are coming in weak. We know they're going to continue to come in weak. But what about the earnings? There's something kind of peculiar that I've noticed over the last few weeks. And it appears that, how do you best put this? That earnings reports, just by the sake of them coming out and not being horrendous, are a catalyst for positive movement in stocks to drive them higher. And this is as long as it seems reasonable that the company was able to last quarter meet or beat their earnings and, more importantly, revenue. Revenue seems to be a big driver right now. But what's interesting about that all is that that's backward looking, right? Isn't it? We're seeing what happened last. No, one of the other things we're seeing is that companies who beat or at least meet the analyst estimate, which a lot of these have been dropped already, to a point that companies had a much lower bar and easier way to get over this hurdle. That if, in fact, the company also cut their guidance, or I shouldn't say cut, no longer is providing guidance, not cut, not changed, but you know what? They pulled it. If companies pulled it, I think somehow there's this feeling that, you know, if we don't know and we don't see and we don't hear, you know what? It's not going to happen. It's not happening. Whereas a company like Roku, who pulled their guidance recently and said they're not going to provide that, but yet at the same time, what they did was they came out with an interim number of what they expected, even though they said they weren't going to, during their earnings this week, and the company was down 10%. Not too bad, but yet it's a company that did in fact tell us what's going on. In other words, let's give the company the benefit of the doubt as long as we're not seeing, we're not really knowing, it's kind of hidden from sight what is going to be in the future. Now, take a company like Disney, for example. Came out with earnings this week, looked absolutely miserable on every level. No question about that. But you have to also consider something, that the earnings report that they put out was for last quarter. And really, while certain areas of Disney's programming, parks, cruises, travel related, and the overall breadth of Disney's offerings really were not massively affected until the latter part of March, although they had some things in China, et cetera, that started a little bit earlier. But nonetheless, it was really just, we'll call it the last 3 weeks for Disney of March that was really affected dramatically. And we don't know because we don't have guidance going forward. They cut their dividend for the next 6 months, dropped it. So that's kind of good. Streaming numbers are coming in good for Disney Plus. Stock up on the news. Now, maybe there's a bit of those people who are short saying, you know what? Okay, it's done enough. Not going to go down much lower. So we can kind of say that let's take our profits on this, cover our position on the short side, and let's move aside of this. But I think what's really happening is, in a weird way, investors are willing to buy blindly as long as they just don't see what's going to happen. As long as they don't know about it, it's not there. And we'll use the trend from last quarter and project that out to the next quarter, hoping that pretty much everything will resolve by the end of next quarter. So here we are in the start of May, first week is second week of May, and things are getting better. Places are opening, partially, but questionably about how much consumption is going to be. So much of this doesn't really make a lot of sense, and I read your emails and your comments back to me, and this is what you're telling me. I don't understand. So right now, it's really difficult to discern fundamentally what's happening. Very difficult to really put down on pen and paper any calculation of the future. That's why you have to rely on charts to a degree. That's why you also have to believe in the longer term and understand the modeling that you do for what's going to happen long term. And right now, the modeling that I see is that we are going to have a very, very slow slog to economic upswing. You want to call it a U? You want to call it a elongated U, or maybe a square root, where we see a little bit of an upturn, then it kind of flattens out for a long period of time? Okay, I'll go with that. But with interest rates near zero throughout the world, because central banks are pressing on the gas as much as possible, talking about how they have even more room to go, and some are in the negative interest rate environment, maybe some of these numbers actually make sense because there's nowhere else to go and there's nowhere else really to invest. And especially if you have a long enough time horizon and just say, you know, I'm going to ignore what's going on here. This is the, you know, this is something that's going to go on for 6 or 8 months, or take your time period and look at it. And then, you know, beyond that, things are going to get back to normal. And I'm willing to invest at these levels. I'm willing to invest pretty much at any level. You know, there are those permabulls that will invest in any situation and permabears that won't invest in any situation. But somewhere in the middle are those other investors that get concerned with questionable outlook and get really concerned about you know, where we are going near term and long term, the excess debt that we have. But there are buyers that will say, you know what, maybe there's some decent bargains at these prices. The one question I ask, and I really kind of want you to think about this week, is what if? What if this is really a game changer? What if businesses and consumers change their behaviors for a much longer time than anybody has anticipated? What if there is going to be a real elongated cycle of a downturn and inability for the stimulus to outlast that downturn? I mean, these are going to be questions that we're not going to be able to find the answers to for a very, very long period of time. But for now, generally speaking, I don't think investors think anything's going to change, and we're just going to get right back on that horse, get that V-shaped recovery, and we'll be on our way. So I want to get to our guest. This is someone who I've been looking forward to talking with for a while. So I really am pretty excited about bringing him on. Before that, let's talk a little bit about efficiency. So let me take a second and discuss something with you. I don't know about you, but what's going on with emails these days? I mean, it's out of control. You get spam, junk, unwanted advertisements. You know what I mean? It is so distracting. And I got to tell you something. It's a huge time waster trying to sift through your emails all day, every day. But I found a great solution for you. It's called SaneBox. And it uses an artificial intelligence monitoring system for your inbox. What happens is that it basically scans all of your inboxes, and every email service works with this, and it separates the most important emails that you want to see from the ones that are just, I mean, simply time wasters. The emails that you need are in your inbox, and those that you don't are, well, scooted over to the Sane Later inbox. And working with it is really easy. If you know how email folders work, well, you got it. You know how SaneBox works. Find an email in the wrong folder? Well, just move it. Nothing to learn, nothing to install. SaneBox works directly with every single email server or service that has ever been created. So you can get it for free and a $25 credit by visiting SaneBox.com/TDI. That's SaneBox.com/TDI. And our guest today is Sean Brown, and he's the CEO and president of YCharts, which is an investment research platform that, we're going to let him tell you about this because it's really cool. It's something that we use. And one of the things, and the reason, Sean, that I wanted to bring you on, it definitely was not because you're a Chicago Cubs fan. Let's just get that straight, okay? But one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on was that a lot of questions have come in recently and asking us about, hey, what do you use for analysis? You know, I got these tools that we can use, but they're just not what I'm looking for. And I keep on sending out the emails or talking about, you know, YCharts as being something that we use. So I thought we would start. Well, how are you, first of all? How are you holding up in this whole thing?
Andrew, I'm doing okay. You know, I probably live in like you and all of your users or all your listeners are, except I probably don't have the benefit of the nice weather and maybe the proximity to the water that that you have down there in Florida.
That is fortunate for me. That keeps me sane. I got to tell you the truth because I can't imagine. First of all, I can't imagine living in a big city like you do in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine living in a big building where you're constrained, you know, and you have all these other tenants in there. Yeah. I'm very fortunate with that. But yeah, that just seems like it's, ugly.
And I'm a bit blessed in that regard. I'm actually 30 miles north of Chicago. Ah. So, but I don't have the water to get out to. So, when my family starts to drive me nuts from all of this time together, I get out at the grill with a glass of wine and see if I can spend 6 hours cooking a burger.
Yeah. Medium. Rare, 6 hours. Honey, you'll be ready in about 3 or 4 hours. You're going to want it rare. That's fine. I just got to really work it hard.
A lot of the time I don't actually turn on the grill.
Yeah, no kidding.
I just stand there and look at it for hours and hours. And eventually my wife figures it out and says, get inside. You got to clean something.
So let's talk a little bit about kind of give us the breakdown of the evolution and the genesis of YCharts.
All right. So YCharts is a little bit over 10 years old. We are an investment research and client communications web-based software application. And again, our purpose for being is to help people make smarter investment decisions and to help them better communicate their insights. And so I like to describe our software as a bit like a really, really high quality Swiss Army knife. And I'm not talking about those crappy ones that you can get at a trade show that had a unit cost of like 7 cents.
Right.
Right. I'm talking about those. You remember those really good ones that actually came from Switzerland?
And they had stuff you're like, what is that for? Like, what do you, the screwdriver, I get that. But what is this tool? I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. And you couldn't, you know, you break your fingernails trying to pull things out. But, you know, like if you think about a Swiss Army knife, like we've got the equivalent of a corkscrew, which helps you open up some great visuals. We've got the screwdriver that helps you on client communications. We have the screeners that helps you pare down a list of securities, Excel linkage, all kinds of deep fundamental research, some workflow enabling tools. So a lot of different tools that kind of the central point is a dashboard that people come into to track securities and news that's most interesting to them.
So, and then, you know, there's a lot of alternatives on there that, you know, the professional versions, names that everybody knows are really expensive. I mean, there's a lot of points of entry into this, but one of the things that I've been with you, you've been around for what, 10 years. I've probably been with you for at least eight, maybe even longer, but here's the thing. one of the things that you really do well, first of all, is you've evolved incredibly over the years. And that's important in all this. The second thing is what I always look for and what's the most important thing to me is that we have clean data. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is that when I look at where the information's coming from, I want it to be a little scrubbed. I want it to be decent. So that's something that's really important because garbage in, garbage out when you do analysis, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
So tell me about how you make sure that there's integrity to the data.
Well, first of all, it starts with selecting the right sources. So it won't be any surprise to you when I tell you that data is largely a commodity, right? There are usually a few different places that you can get data. And we get our data some from what we think are the highest quality sources of information, either directly from the exchanges or from companies like Morningstar or S&P Cap IQ. And in many cases, we have an enormous database of economic data, you know, GDP related things and jobs growth and unemployment figures and all those things that we're getting them directly from the data source. So to answer your question, number one, you got to pick the right sources. Number two is, as a technology company, you just really have to understand and have all the triggers in place to make sure you're getting the data, make sure you've got validation checks, make sure when you're doing calculations on top of the data that it works. And in these small examples where it doesn't work, you fix it and make sure it doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say that the big things we focus on are having great data, having an incredibly easy to use platform. But the real big differentiator for YCharts, besides you can use it at your home and it's got good data and stuff, we really pride ourselves on customer support and actually you having an individual that you can talk to. Because inevitably, your team are gonna need some help and we don't think you should have to, struggle with web searches to find a phone number or find a chat session.
Yeah, I know, because I could tell you that, and just to let you know that, you know, over the years, we found different issues and questions and like, hey, this doesn't look right, or where is this data? And we just pop on the chat real quick and it's fixed pretty quickly, as best as possible.
That. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, some things take a little bit longer, but, you know, generally speaking, it works well. One of the things that we use it for is not only economic data, but it's also the fundamental data. What I like to do is, while you have some really cool charting features where you can chart fundamental data, so for example, people can look at earnings per share over a period of time or dividends paid for a particular mm-hmm. stock or looking at ratios, a particular ratio for a stock. So all the fundamental data points that are available for charting, which is kind of cool. You can look at it in table form mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. But we take that and we then move it and have an automatic link into Excel mm-hmm. and allow us then to calculate further on our methodologies. So is that used a lot by people? And tell people that don't understand what I'm talking about how that works.
So one of the things I always hated when I personally as a corporate executive picked a software company that I was going to build dependence on in enabling my operations, I always hated when that company was missing features and functions because inevitably it was missing. And I was just left to live with it. And I was usually too small of a customer that I got any priority on getting that feature added. We have tried to address that at YCharts by saying, in the event that we don't have something you need, we make it really easy to export the data, the stuff that you liked, into Excel. We've got a ton of templates available. Use those, tweak those. We're in touch with you and we know what you're creating in Excel and why you're creating it. And we kind of look at Excel as our R&D, the research part of what we're going to put next in our product. So if we see a lot of customers who have said, hey, I needed to download it to Excel because I had certain complex calculations I wanted to do after I did a nice screen and YCharts, you didn't have my unique data element. Mm-hmm. We hear that a couple times and all of a sudden that rises in our roadmap and becomes part of our product. Right. But at the end of the day, we've enabled our customers and over the long run, hopefully we've enabled them in the software and not in Excel.
So just to clarify, because this is what I like. So you use the word export and I want to make sure people don't get the wrong visual. So there's an actual, I don't know the technical term of what you use, but there's a link
Dynamic Link. Yep.
Yeah, Dynamic Link, which is embedded inside of Excel, as long as you have the credentialing and you sign in through Excel and all that good stuff, and you download it and you install it. Basically, what you could do is use a specific method. So you would say, like, you know, equals Y chart, YCS something, and whatever you want to use, whether it's a series or a data point. And now you set up this template. Okay, so now you have this template set up for, let's just say, Apple, right? Mm-hmm. And you say, okay, I want the price of Apple, I want the PE of Apple, I want the market cap of Apple, and you kind of put all these things into a particular arrangement for yourself. Maybe you put data, which you can chart also. So that when you then change the symbol for Apple in Excel, there's no exporting, there's nothing, it will just change. You now change it to IBM, everything changes on the fly. So therefore, all the calculations you did, if you want to do your own PEG ratio or something like that, maybe on a 5-year, maybe on a 3-year, you want to do maybe a calculation of a comparison. So we have spreadsheets that we've done, which compares mutual funds and ETFs to their peer group, as well as giving us 1-year, year-to-date, 3-year, 5-year, as well as all sorts of statistics in an Excel spreadsheet. All we have to do is open it up. All of the mutual funds that we want to look at are there, or we can add some. And it all gives us a total analysis. And we use conditional coloring and conditional work to kind of see who is below their ranks, above their ranks, all sorts of really cool things. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you could do.
That's we should hire you as a salesperson. Honestly. That was absolutely fantastic the way you described it. You're right. It's dynamic. And back to our service side of things. We build a lot of this stuff for our clients. When our clients say, hey, I wish your software did this, we say, let us build that dynamic capability in Excel for you. And then we make that same template available, unless it's unique and proprietary to that client, we make it available to other clients. So we have built up a large body of template spreadsheets that, like you're saying, they dynamically update. It's an Excel add-in that works all the time with Excel. It's perpetually updated, and you're right, you change a ticker and that's easy to do. It's tied into our database, our production database. It gets the same information for that next ticker, and you're exactly right. That's what we do and why we do it.
Right, and we have a huge spreadsheet of economic data, economic charts, I should say. Mm-hmm. All we do is open it up, it automatically updates, really cool. So let's talk about, and you can do that on the YCharts platform as well. But and by the way, I'm not being paid by YCharts at all. I just wanted to bring this to everybody's attention because a lot of people have been asking me. So I don't know the answer to the next question, so I'm throwing it out there to you. If somebody wanted to, like, test drive or I know there's certain things you could do in YCharts that doesn't cost anything, right? But what is there a test drive? How does that work?
Yeah. I'm not real big on the model that buy something and figure out whether it meets your needs. Our approach is try it out. If it meets your needs, then talk to us about a full-time subscription. So we have a couple ways. Somebody can come directly to our site, never deal with a human being, and sign up for their own free trial where they can learn and self-navigate.
Right.
Or they can call us up and say, like to get a demo and have one of our experts give them a demo for 30 or 45 minutes, set them up on a couple week free trial, let them explore anything, check in 3 or 4 times, say, I didn't notice if this feature is there, is it there? So that when they get to the stage of the process where we may say, okay, are you interested in developing a commercial relationship? They have a clear yes or no. We either met their needs or we didn't. And it's been wonderful because we've been growing our customer base so quickly, and one of the biggest pieces of feedback they give us is, I knew what I was buying up front when I bought it, and that feels good in this market.
So let's switch over to, you know, some examples of what you or your clients are using in terms of the ability to navigate through this mess. I mean, right now we have economics in my left hand, which are burning a hole and disintegrating my left hand. And yet we have markets in my right hand that seem to be just defying gravity. Incredible. Mm. So how with using some of the platform, I mean, there's no particular answer, I guess, but what are people doing? What are people looking at?
Well, first of all, I was hoping you might have the answer to this question for me. You've been around the block a few years and so have I. The market seems completely decoupled right now from the economy. And that's just not reconciling well in my head. And that's a bit tough to fathom as a fundamental biased investor. But some to answer your question, so we just put in our software in this time of incredible uncertainty where, you know, people are having earnings report and saying, I have no idea what's coming in coming quarters or coming years. We said, how can we make the near term a little bit more certain? So we know when we have a chance of moving from the near term into a more of a steady state approach. We entered the coronavirus statistics for the world, for countries and for states into our software. We found so many customers were saying to us, well, listen, I can't answer what's going to happen with the tech sector until the smoke clears from the coronavirus. So I can keep going to a bunch of sites and learning what I can learn about that. Or you can give me a tool and put this in your software where you can see the cases, the deaths, the hospitalizations, the tests administered by country, by state, and world, global statistics. And you can start to see when the flattening occurs and how that might be interplaying, if it does, with indices, with fundamentals of stocks. You know, how does that affect a New York-based company when a New York public company when New York coronavirus cases start to level off? And so to answer your question, honestly, the charts that show a combination of economic-related things and security-related things, those correlations seem to have disappeared.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we help people see that they've disappeared and hopefully paint a path to when they re-merge with each other.
So let me throw this out to you, because we talked about this in the office today with the question of, okay, why are stocks going up? And maybe there's an idea that things are better on the other side, and maybe the fact that we have this new drug over here and a treatment over there. And how about this as something to think about, especially as a fundamental investor? There is a little known area in the recent CARES Act, I believe it was, that was relief from net operating losses, whereas companies are able to look back, I believe it's 5 years, and then bring forward and redo their taxes to take the net operating losses all this year, as opposed to having them carry forward all those years. So if a company has a net operating loss that they have on the books, so let's call it $10 billion because of maybe some expenditures that they had over the years, or maybe some kind of, however they did their accounting, right? And now they have all of a sudden a number of $10 billion on the books. And what they did is they took all of this off over the last 5 years, slowly but surely, because you can only take part of that on your, you know, through your tax process. And now you're all of a sudden able to look back, bring them all forward, and then from 5 years ago, bring it all forward and take that net operating loss now. That could be something substantial, don't you think?
Yeah, it sure could, and it could certainly help improve financials this year.
Right.
I think the thing I'm struggling with though is, have we reached a point where there isn't just a massive sea change in how business will be performed in the future? So regardless of what operating losses you may carry forward and how that may impact some hypothetical discounted cash flow model and things in the near term, the thing I struggle with right now is, will I ever get on a cruise ship again?
Right. Right.
We are operating a company. My team, Y Charts, you know, just under 60 people. We haven't been in an office for 2 months. Not a single employee has been in an office for 2 months.
Right.
Why do we need real estate going forward? And what's the implication?
I talked about this yesterday. There was a CEO conference that I was asked to be a part of, a group, and they said, what are the things that are going to be changed forever? I said, why does anybody need A-class office space anymore in a major metropolis for every single employee? Maybe you have like a front end and maybe a conference room, maybe for the executives to sit out, but why do you need it for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the open workspace concept, that's shut down.
Yeah, you're going to be able to fit a Fortune 500 firm into, if it wasn't such a crappy company right now, WeWorks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, literally you can get a Fortune 500 company and have a place to meet and entertain clients, and you can have a workforce that's dispersed not just around the United States, but anywhere. And so, you know, when I look at the, getting back to your question, you know, about the things that We're throwing the kitchen sink at helping our companies survive this period and helping them mitigate the financial impact on their income statements, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And okay, so I can have a vision that maybe we're going to buffer the impact in 2020. I just can't picture 2021 to 2025. And I think about the companies that have suffered, the airlines, the casinos, the hotels, the cruise lines. And then I think about the companies that have thrived. Like, is Zoom going to continue to thrive? Is Peloton going to continue to thrive? Is Netflix going to continue to thrive? And so the thing for me as a fundamental investor, I'm working to form a clear picture of what our future looks like, because I think I have put 40 miles on my car in the last 2 months.
Yeah, I get a gallon every 2 weeks.
Yep.
You know,
and you're going into the office,
yeah,
right?
Right.
I'm not. And literally I put 40 miles on my car in 2 months, and so, I don't know what that means about my future.
Well, but at the same, like, so what you're, let me just consolidate what you're saying here, right? So you're saying there's going to be winners, there's going to be losers. I mean, and they could flip around a little bit from, yep, depending on what happens. Companies could win also because they don't pay all the excess costs for their real estate, for their, yep, their big offices, but yet commercial real estate may suffer substantially, mm-hmm, long term. But here's a question from a fundamental investor and from someone who runs a firm that provides fundamental data. How is it that we are satisfied as investors looking back at last quarter's results and bidding up companies because they did really well last quarter, when in fact much of the problems with regard to the shutdowns didn't happen until approximately mid-month March? And now the rest of the companies are pulling, for the most part, pulling their guidance moving forward, whether for the next quarter or for 2020. How in the world are we supposed to even believe that, and I talk about this all the time, $150 estimate for the S&P 500 for 2020 on earnings, which is only about a 10% reduction, correlates to now a 20 times multiple in a recessionary time? How does that even work?
I'm not smart enough to have the answer to that question, Bill. I hope you do, because with so much uncertainty out there, it feels like nobody even knows how to grasp for what the new multiple is. Yeah. So it's stick right around what the old one was and know that the government seems to show a willingness to throw the kitchen sink at the problem.
Right.
And Americans tend to figure their way out of challenging situations, and we'll figure our way through this. So I don't know what the new multiple is, so I'm going to kind of stick with the old one,
I guess.
And that certainly is arming a lot of people that are saying, you know, there's going to be a second fall. You know, it's giving some support to them to say, hey, you know, what if there isn't a whole lot more stimulus that's available? Or what if the kitchen sink, there's no more things to throw at this than the kitchen sink that's already been thrown? And you're seeing real smart people say, here's the side of the fence I come out at, here's the side of the fence I come out at. Back to the company that I'm the head coach of, we know there's all kinds of things people are mulling forward. What we're trying to do is provide objective data and easy to use tools to help people who have a thesis, a suspicion, or a premise that they wanted to investigate, to help them see if they can support that or not.
So one of the things when I talk with, when we set this all up, we talked about maybe looking at a particular stock and going through the analysis process through Y charts, right? Mm-hmm. Just as best as we can with an audio. We talked about Disney, right?
Yeah.
Where this is an example of a stock that has had strong fundamentals, but is pretty much, if you think about all the different aspects of Disney, from the parks, from their cruise lines, from hotels, from ESPN, right? They're getting hit on every single end of this thing. Mm-hmm. And how do we go through the fundamental analysis on that and using Y charts as an analysis tool?
Well, I think the big thing from a fundamental standpoint, and you're seeing it a lot now, is there's an awful lot of balance sheet scrutiny now while we're in this, completely, unpaved ground that we're in now. I think that the big thing fundamental investors are looking at is, how strong is this balance sheet? Because regardless of the best laid plans for future revenue and EPS, if you don't have the cash to survive, and you got to go through bankruptcy to weather it out, that's a challenging proposition for investors. So, you know, I think you know, the thing we're seeing with Disney, you look at Disney and you say, you can look at it at the macro level, and that's usually where I would start and say, well, you know, what do I know about revenue? What do I know about EPS? What do I know about the key margins that are important to me? But then you need to kind of start diving into the details that you see around, well, how is the park related part of their business doing? How's the media? You know, how is Disney Plus operating? You look at the revenues and the operating incomes associated with these subsegments, and you start to form a picture of how the pieces add up to the whole. And so, you know, if you get by with a sense of comfort that the balance sheet is sufficient and they've cut the dividend because dividend yield, you know, they were paying was crazy. The thing I'm enjoying looking at right now are analyst estimates. So one of the things we have in our software, if you pulled up Disney revenue and EPS, I'm not sure it's real helpful to be backwards looking right now. Mm-hmm. So one of the interesting things is to look at what are analyst estimates going forward. And I don't know how the analysts are coming up with these estimates. but you start to look and say, well, what does consensus look like for the estimates? And maybe there are people out there smarter than me that follow this stock 24/7. And what do their estimates look like? And you start to analyze those. And then you look at, details on the segments. And eventually you form your own impression. Now, the thing I struggle with is, you know, again, you and I have been around the block a bit. You remember in 2008?
Yep.
I had my eye, from a fundamental standpoint, I had my eye on J.P. Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
J.P. Morgan Chase. I had just felt like the fundamentals of the business and the leadership was really interesting. But I was waiting for my opportunity to jump in. And then there was a crash, and like 2009 seemed like a great time to jump in. It was kind of one of these buy the dips because mm-hmm. it's fundamentally good business. It'll recover from this. You know, I'm in. You know, turned out to be a good bet. 300% return over the better part of a decade. You know, it's good. It was a good pick.
Sure.
Right now, though, which one of those buy the dip things, when you do a fundamental analysis, which one of those did you have your eye on? And do you still have a clear picture of what that business is going to look like in a month or in a quarter? And do you have the confidence to buy? I don't know. Tell me how you're looking at this.
I mean, so it's interesting because, you know, I look at it a variety of different ways. And yes, I look at, you know, estimates of what they are and kind of with a grain of salt, because I think analysts are a little bit giddy on this and don't have the opportunity to really look at what things are, because companies, by the way, are not providing guidance. So therefore there's a lot, there's an air pocket. We're flying blind, right? We don't know exactly what these numbers are. I think there's a lot of hope right now that these companies will be able to weather. I'm going to take the month of April, which we know is a throwaway month. And I know that it is completely horrendous for companies, generally speaking, you know, Disney or other companies that have any kind of consumer facing of any sort. And then on top of that, you look at May. I think the idea is a lot of people thought of, you know, May 15th, give or take a couple of days, is going to be, okay, we're open, ready for business. That's where I think we were going from. And I think what's going to happen, though, is it's going to be a slow slog to get back into gear. Now, of course, we know some things like, I think some of the cruise ships aren't going to cruise until August. Some of the airlines are shutting down a lot of stuff through July. So and restaurants are starting to open. But from what I can see, even if a restaurant is going to be fully open, the question is going to be, what is the floor space going to look like? How many people are going to actually be able to take on? And then on top of that, how many people are getting hired back by a particular restaurant? The parks with Disney, if they open up, what's going to be the capacity they're going to be allowed to have initially? And even if it's, I don't know, 25% of the park capacity, let's say, are people going to be going and rushing out to do so? There'll be a handful of people or a variety of people that would be like, ah, you know what? We're beyond this. But there's going to be a lot of other people who are like, you know what? They're scarred. Something we're calling PVSD, which is post-virus stress disorder. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be a lot of that that's going on. So when I look at a company like Disney, analyst estimates looking forward, core company, you know, good. They have all these sports and all this other stuff. I just think it's a damaged brand for some time to come. I don't know how long that's going to be, right?
Yeah.
The difference is J.P. Morgan got the benefit of the bailouts and the fact that at the end of the day, banks won't go under for the, you know, we let a couple go. We let a couple go. But as a very smart person once said to me many, many years ago, if reincarnation is true, then I want to come back as a bank. Okay. Because we know that the banks are, you know, that's what the Fed was created for. It was all about the banks and they're going to hold them up. Disney, on the other hand, is it economically, are they a requirement for the economy? Not so much. I mean, I don't know.
So listen, let's talk about a really tough one because Disney, you know, I could argue it's an American icon and the number of people they employ and the throw in the too big to fail logic that we used in 2008. The one I am struggling with right now is Boeing.
I don't even understand.
I look at Boeing and say they were in a world of dookie before the virus hit, right?
Yep.
There was, you know, based on the 737 MAX and the crashes and that fiasco, you looked at that and I was starting to get comfortable with the fact that this company is too strategically important to the United States to fail.
Correct.
It is making a really important asset and not something that that we want to outsource to our partner countries. We need to be good at manufacturing planes. There's a lot of military significance and other significance to them. So I said in my head, too big to fail may be an interesting opportunity to jump in and buy because hopefully good management and good boards will figure out the mess they got themselves in and get out and you get in at a good price. Now you throw the whole coronavirus issue and what is travel going to look like and how are orders going to come in when nobody sees a clear path to fill a plane anytime real soon. And I come to a little bit of block somewhat like Disney where I say, ooh, I'm missing some key information that's only going to reveal itself in a year's time. What do I do? And I almost feel like I'm sitting at a blackjack table.
Yeah.
You know, with
it's,
a 40.
It's more like, I think it's more like roulette.
It is. It probably isn't. It's like putting on double zeros and going, let's see, I may win, but.
So the difference with Boeing though, is now we just had a total change to the business structure when they had, first of all, the 737 MAX and change of governance. And then that's the first part of it. The second part of it came the coronavirus. And everybody, before the coronavirus, before this whole thing happened, everybody's like, you know what, look at their backlog of inventory, look at their orders, look at they're going on, they're going to be fine. Once the 737 MAX gets up and running, you know what, we'll be fine long-term, right? Okay. However, now we throw in this coronavirus, and their main customers are suffering so badly that they're going to take them years to recover, and planes aren't like cheap. It's not like you're going to spend, you know, $4 million for a plane. You can figure out. I mean, these companies need lifelines right now to keep themselves going, right? Mm-hmm. On top of that, Boeing has tapped a humongous amount of credit. Their balance sheet is now upside down from where it was before. So going from, while they are strategically important and maybe too big to fail in a way, that doesn't mean their stock necessarily has to be in the 125 range of where it is now, because the company itself is now seeing a sea change of an entirely different business structure looking out forward from the customer base who is now impaired to the fact that now their balance sheet looks horrendous.
Yep.
So, you know, now they have the military contracts too. That will be help. Yep. And you'll see the government come in with some of that. But yeah, Boeing's a real, I mean, that's a real problem. And you know, maybe 10, 15 years from now, I can't wait 10, 15 years. I mean, if I don't see, you know, I got to see something happening.
Yeah. And that's the tricky thing. You know, if you were a day trader, which I don't think you are, and I know I'm not, you know, you'd be saying to yourself, well, not only do I not know what the fundamentals truly will look like going forward, it's unknowable at this point in time, but then what multiple, depending on what fundamental statistic you're looking at, what's a fair multiple to apply to that fundamental, the revenue, EPS, the discounted cash flow? How do I think about the rates, the WACC associated with it? You know, there are two unknowable variables. And so back to your question about why are stocks holding up the way they are? I think the math's too hard and unknowable now. And
yeah, it's totally unknowable.
The last price is as good as the next one. I don't know.
So that's exactly what I was going to come back to with Y charts. The whole point right now is it's almost in a way it necessitates the next stage. So we use quantitative analysis, which is screening and filtering and scoring and all sorts of ways to find stocks through a process. Then we look at the fundamentals through underneath the hood, look at what's going on. Then finally, you got technical analysis. And this is where I think technical analysis really comes in very handy because, you know, if we see stocks that the fundamentals that we can't match up because the forward look is just, we're blind to it. And the backward look is just that it's something in the past. It doesn't matter. I mean, I think you have to start going to the charts and looking at the price action of this and see what's happening, you know, because without that, there's nothing to go on. And if in fact we do see that Boeing stock breaks above a certain resistance point, that maybe there's something that's out there, there's a catalyst of some sort that's not already baked in because you don't know about it for a quarter on quarter on quarter. Mm-hmm. And therefore you have to say, well, that's what I'm willing to maybe think about starting a position once we level off here. So, I mean, that's the only way, you know, it's a trifecta of analysis process.
Yeah, I love the way you talked about the interplay between fundamental and technical because I agree with it fully. You know, to me and my wife, it's the same approach we took to buying a house. Like our first criteria was, you know, what does the school system look like? What's the tax rate look like? And what's the crime rate look like? Those are some things that helped us say, hey, what town and you know, how much is the price per square foot and stuff like that. We started to get comfortable with a town, and that was our fundamental analysis. The technical analysis was looking at the comparables and saying, now, could we get a good deal on that house within? Is the timing right for us to jump in and potentially make some money over the long term, or are we hitting at the high? Yeah. And that's exactly the way our customers use Y charts is fundamental to find out if you like the security, technical to figure out what's the right time to enter.
Right, because you can have the best looking fundamentals in the world and the thing just craps out on you for some reason because technicals kind of look a little bit into the future, whereas fundamentals are looking backwards. So let me wrap this up and ask you. So in terms of the entire package, so I know you have news flow on there, right? You got quick quotes that you can get. You can get fundamental analysis. You got mutual funds. You got a lot of deep information, MPT statistics, a lot of Morningstar data that flows through on there as well. ETFs, you could build models on there. Talk about your models for a second.
Yeah, so models, you know, combining multiple ETFs, mutual funds, and securities, we allow you to create models. And when you've created it, you can evaluate the key statistics around returns, risks, and all other key. A model ends up looking just like a security. So you can then analyze a model in the same way that you would analyze an ETF or analyze an individual stock. And so there are about 10,000 models out in the market right now, commercial models. We help people sort through what's the right model for them or help them with their own ideas to shape a model that has the right performance characteristics for what they want to have for themselves or their clients.
Sean Brown, CEO and president of Y Charts, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Andrew, thanks for having me. And when you figure out the answers to all these questions we've talked about fundamentals and multiples, please give me a call. Love to hear from you.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to wrap it up for this week's TDI, the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 661. Thanks for joining me. Hopefully you have a great weekend. Spend some time outside. Give yourself a little bit of sunshine if you have the opportunity to do so. And I will see you again next week. Before I do end, I want to mention one thing. Mondays, 4:30 p.m., we do the pop-up Q&A webinar. You can find out more information over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check that out. If you have any questions about the markets, about the investments, about whatever it is out there in terms of finance, you can definitely check that out. And of course, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. All the information about the show and our strategies is over there, so you can check that out. Until next week, I want to wish you the very best. Stay healthy, stay safe. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.